And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, it's June the 9th, 160th day of the year. The war in the Ukraine is well over 100 days now. 205 days remain till the end of the year. 411 BC, the Athenian coup succeeds, forming a short-lived oligarchy. 53 AD, Roman Emperor Nero marries Claudia Octavia. In 68, Nero commits suicide after quoting Virgil's Aeneid, thus ending the Julio-Claudian dynasty and starting the civil war known as the Year of the Four Emperors. 721, Odo of Aquitaine defeats the Moors in the Battle of Toulouse. 747, Abbasid Revolution. Abu Muslim Khorasani begins an open revolt against the Umayyad rule, which is carried out under the sign of the Black Standard. 1311, Lucio's Maestà, semi-annual artwork of the early Italian Renaissance. Artwork of the early Italian Renaissance is unveiled and installed in Siena Cathedral in Siena, Italy. 1523, the Partisian Faculty of Theology fines Simon de Colinis for publishing the biblical commentary Commentari Initiatori in Quattro Evangeli by Jacques Lefebvre Staples. 1534, Jacques Cartier is the first European to describe and map the St. Lawrence River. 1607, Second Anglo-Dutch War. The raid on the Medway by the Dutch fleet begins. It lasts for 5 days, results in the worst ever defeat of the Royal Navy. 1732, James Oglethorpe is granted a royal charter for the colony of the future U.S. state of Georgia. 1772, the British schooner Gaspee is burned in Narragansett Bay, Rhode Island. 1798, Irish Rebellion of 1798, the battles of Arklow and St. Field take place. 1815, end of the Congress of Vienna. The new European political situation is set. 1856, 500 Mormons leave Iowa City, Iowa for the Mormon Trail, heading for Utah. 1862, American Civil War. Stonewall Jackson concludes his successful Shenandoah Valley campaign with a victory in the Battle of Port Republic. His tactics during that campaign are now studied by militaries around the world. 1863, American Civil War. Battle of Brandy Station in Virginia. The largest cavalry battle on American soil ends Confederate cavalry dominance in the Eastern Theater. 1885. Treaty of Tientsin is signed to end the Sino-French War, with China eventually giving up Tonkin and Annam, most of present-day Vietnam, to France. 1900, Indian nationalist Birsa Munda dies of cholera in the British prison. 1950, William Jennings Bryan resigns as Woodrow Wilson's Secretary of State over a disagreement regarding the U.S. handling of the sinking of the RMS Lusitania. 1832, Alliance Regional Assembly convened for the first plenary session in Marie Hammond Island. Today is celebrated as Self-Government Day of Island. 1923, Bulgaria's military takes over the government in a coup. 1928, Charles Kingsford Smith completes the first Trans-Pacific flight in a Fokker trimotor monoplane, the Southern Cross. 1930, Chicago Tribune reporter Jake Lingle is killed during rush hour in a Illinois Central train station by Leo Vincent Brothers, allegedly over $100,000 gambling debt owed to Al Capone, the Caponester. 1944, World War II. 99 civilians are hung from lampposts and balconies by German troops in Thule in France in reprisal for Marquisard's attacks. The Marquisards were partisans, don't you know? 1944, World War II, Soviet Union invades East Karelia and the previously Finnish part of Karelia occupied by Finland since 1941. 1948, foundation of the International Council and Archives under the auspices of UNESCO. 1953, the Flint-Worcester tornado outbreak sequence kills 94 people in Massachusetts. 1954, Joseph Welch, special counsel for the U.S. Army, lashes out at Senator Joseph McCarthy during the Army-McCarthy hearings, giving McCarthy the famous rebuke, "You've done enough, you have no sense of decency, sir, at long last. Have you left no sense of decency?" McCarthy rose to great heights, and then it all came crashing down. 1957, first ascent of Broad Peak by Fitz Wintersteller, Marcus Smuck, Kurt Dienberger, and Herman Buell. 1959, USS George Washington is launched, first nuclear-powered ballistic missile submarine. 1965, the civilian prime minister of South Vietnam, Phan Huy Quoc, resigns after being unable to work with a junta led by Nguyen Cao Ky. Also in 65, Vietnam War, the Viet Cong commences combat with the Army of the Republic of Vietnam in the Battle of Dong Cai, one of the largest battles in the war. 1967, Six Days War, Israel captures the Golan Heights from Syria. 1968, President Johnson declares a national day of mourning following the assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy. 1972, severe rainfall causes a dam in the Black Hills of South Dakota to burst, creates a flood that kills 238 people and causes $160 million worth of damage. And that was $160 million in 1972 dollars. 1973, in horse racing, Secretariat wins the U.S. Triple Crown. 1978, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints opens its priesthood to all worthy men, ending a 148-year-old policy of excluding black men. 1979, the ghost train fire at Luna Park, Sydney, Australia, kills seven. 1995, ANSET New Zealand Flight 703 crashes in the Tararua Range during approach to Palmerston North Airport in the North Island of New Zealand. Four people are killed. 1999, Kosovo War. The Federal Republic of Yugoslavia and NATO signed a peace treaty. 2008, two bombs explode at a train station near Algiers, Algeria, kills at least 13. 2009, an explosion kills 17 and injures at least 46 in a hotel in Peshawar, Pakistan. 2010, at least 40 people are killed, more than 70 wounded in a suicide bombing at a wedding party in Arghandab, Kandahar. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Anniversary of the accession of King Abdullah II in Jordan. Autonomy Day in Ireland. Christian Feast Day. Aidan of Lindisfarne in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Beatty in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Columbia. Ephraim, the Syrian, in Roman Catholic Church and the Church of England. Jose de Anchieta, Primus and Felician. Coral Triangle Day. La Rioja Day in La Rioja. Murcia Day in Murcia. And National Heroes Day in Uganda. Alrighty, let's see what else we got. Alrighty. All right, in 68, A.D. Roman Emperor Nero, as I said, committed suicide. He asked his secretary, Epaphroditus, to slit his throat because the Senate had imposed death by flogging. He was an extremely hated ruler. In 641, Arabic Islamic army conquers the Romans at Alexandria, taking control of Egypt. 922, French Republic chooses Robert I as King of France. 1075, at the Battle of Hamburg Umstrut, German King Henry IV beats Saxon. He's also the Holy Roman Emperor. Of course, by that time, the empire was not holy, it wasn't Roman. 1456 was the 23rd recorded perihelion passage of Halley's Comet. 1525, the tax revolt in Herzogenbosch. 1529, Zurich declares war on Catholic cantons. 1531, Pope Clemens VII and Francois I signed a secret treaty against the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. He did not take that very kindly. 1549, the Book of Common Prayer is adopted by the Church of England. 1572, Wilhelm von Oranje's army occupies Gelderland. 1628, the first deportation from what's now the U.S. was Thomas Morton of Massachusetts. 1650, the Harvard Corporation, the most powerful of the two administrative boards of Harvard, is established. It was the first legal corporation in the Americas. 1720, Sweden and Denmark signed the Third Treaty of Stockholm. 1752, the French army surrenders to the British in Trichinopoly, India. 1772, the first Protestant church west of Pennsylvania, it was in Ohio, holds communion on this date. 1772, the first naval attack of the Revolutionary War takes place in Providence, Rhode Island. 1784, John Carroll is appointed supervisor of U.S. Catholic missions. 1789, the Spanish capture the British schooner Northwest America near Vancouver Island. 1790, the first book copyrighted under the Constitution is Philadelphia Spelling Book. 1803, British explorer and cartographer Matthew Flinders arrives in Sydney. He became the first person to circumnavigate Australia, proving once and for all it's one continent. 1822, Charles Graham of New York patents porcelain false teeth. 1856, I talked earlier about 500 Mormons leaving Iowa City, Iowa, and heading west for Salt Lake City. They carried all their possessions in two-wheeled hand carts, kind of like wheelbarrows. 1860, the first U.S. dime novel was published. Maleska, Indian Wife of the White Hunter by Ms. Ann Stevens. Those dime novels became quite popular. And let's, you know, folks, a dime was quite a bit of money in those days. 1868 was the first meeting of the Board of Regents, University of California. 1870, U.S. President Grant meets the Sioux Chief Red Cloud at the White House in Washington, D.C. on this date in 1870. 1873, the Alexandra Palace in London burns down after being open only 16 days. 1898, China leases Hong Kong's new territories to the UK for 99 years. 1898, the Second Convention of Peking leases the new territories of Hong Kong to the UK for 99 years rent-free, expiring June 30th, 1997, at which time they took them back. 1900, in China, the Boxers destroyed the race course in Peking, a few miles from the legations and center and symbol of diplomatic social life and Western privilege in China. 1908, King Edward VIII of Great Britain visits Tsar Nicholas II at Reval in Russia. Well, the two discussed the growing power of Germany and the British plans for reform in Macedonia. They were cousins, don't you know? 1909, Alice Hugh Ramsey, 22-year-old housewife from Hackensack, New Jersey, becomes the first woman to drive across the U.S. in a Maxwell 30. She drives 3,800 miles from Manhattan to San Francisco in only 59 days. And that included the pit stops, don't you know? 1915, President Wilson sends the second Lusitania note to Germany, protesting the sinking of the Lusitania and refuting Germany's claim the British blockade was illegal. 1919, is a general steel strike in France. 1919, the Red Army captures Ufa in Russia. 1922, saw the first ringing of the Harkness Memorial chime at Yale. 1928, Charles Kingsford Smith and Charles Ulam are first to fly across the Pacific when they end their flight from California to Brisbane. 1929, the Venezuelan rebel Urbina lets Dutch and Curacao's hostages go free. 1931, first rocket-powered aircraft design was patented by Robert Goddard. Also in 1933, President Niceto Alcalá Zamora takes power. 1934, saw the first appearance of the one and only Donald Duck in a cartoon called The Wise Little Hen. 1935, Ho-Umizu Agreement, the Republic of China under KMT administration, recognizes Japanese occupations in northeast China. 1941, Archbishop de Jong bans priests cooperating with Rejects Radio. 1942, German Netherlands press reports 3 million Dutch are sent to East Europe. Also in 43, saw the beginning of pay-as-you-go, also known as withholding U.S. income tax deductions authorized. In 1945, Warner Brothers cartoon of Gruesome Twosome is released starring the inimitable Tweety Bird, premiered in the U.S. on this date. In 1945, Australian troops land in Brunei Bay in North Borneo. In 1946, 19 guests at the Canfield Hotel die in a fire in Dubuque, Iowa. 1946, 66,545 fans help Yankees break the million attendance mark. 1946, Bhumibol Adulyadej becomes king of Thailand after the death of his brother, King Ananda Mahendol. 1946, New York Giant Mel Ott becomes the first manager in Major League Baseball history to be ejected from both games of a doubleheader. Needless to say, the Giants lost both games to the Pittsburgh Pirates. 1949, Georgia Niece Clark of Kansas becomes the first woman treasurer of the U.S. 1951 saw the appearance of the Doodles Weaver Show on NBC TV. This day in 1953, Milton Berle's TV show, Texaco Star Theater, last airs on NBC. 1955, temperature reaches 100 degrees Fahrenheit in Seattle, Washington. The then hottest day on record. They ain't got nothing on El Paso. 1958, the novelty song The Purple People Eater by Shub Willie hits number one. And also in 58, Queen Elizabeth II officially opens London Gatwick Airport. 1960, Typhoon Mary in China kills at least 1,600. 1962, Warner Brothers' Bill of Hare, starring the one and only Bugs Bunny, premieres in the U.S. 1967, Israeli troops reach the Suez Canal. 1969, Warren Burger confirmed as U.S. Chief Justice. 1975, a fire in the prison hospital in Sanford, Florida, kills 10 prisoners and one guard. 1978, Johannes Gutenberg's Bible, the first book produced using the printing press. There are 21 known complete copies, sold for $2.4 million in London. And finally, in 1980, Richard Pryor suffered severe burns from freebasing cocaine. Alrighty, well, we've been talking about all kinds of strange things. Been a lot of unexplained deaths in the woods, a lot of vanishing from state parks that have never been satisfactorily explained. Alrighty. As soon as my system begins to work again, there we go. We got a story by somebody who gave his name only as Eddie. And he said when he was 12, something very strange happened to him. He was on his second deer hunting trip with his Uncle Mike in Dodge County. It wasn't long after they got started to hike that they came across a scene that just boggled the mind. Didn't know how else to put it other than say that there were a gang of deer terrorizing and beating up on a hunter. Now, they were a good distance away when they first saw it, so neither he or his uncle had much to say about it. He commanded the young man to stay put, and he went off down the hill to the edge of the woods where the action was taking place. Not only was the hunter beaten, but he was gored. Because buck deer have antlers. And even after he was dead, the angry deer kept trampling him. And when the Uncle Mike shot his rifle in the air, the deer stopped trampling the man and just stared at him. They didn't run off. Looked like they were considering charging in his direction, but when he fired another two shots in the sky, they concluded it wasn't worth the risk, and they turned around. So the deer started walking into the woods. One of them turned and snatched the dead hunter's arm and drug his body along with him. Now, this was one of the most bizarre things that either one of them had ever seen. When his uncle got back to him, they walked straight back to their truck, kept his rifle ready in case the deer came after them. I mean, for people to shoot deer, well, that's happened since firearms were invented. But for the deer to go after the hunters, that's another thing. Now, there were a lot of theories that were bandied about. I mean, certainly there was a belief these were not ordinary deer. And the belief is, turnabout is fair play. People eat deer, and it was a belief that this time the deer were going to eat the deer were going to eat the hunter. Well, maybe you're not as safe as you think you are in the woods when you go hunting. Got another story from a young lady named Holly. She experienced a terrifying night in the summer of 2004. She's camping with her ex-boyfriend, Brian. They spent the previous summer tent camping all over the Pacific Northwest and never had a single problem. But it was only their first adventure that summer that they saw something they believed was horrifying. They were both elementary school teachers, so they had most of their summers off. And they thought it was destiny when they met, given they had such love of adventures in nature. She grew up camping with her parents, but didn't think she'd ever find a boyfriend like Brian, who was into sleeping in the woods like she was. And soon after they met, she learned that he had a similar upbringing as she did. So, of course, the sparks flew. Well, the first destination in 2004 was a mountain campground just outside of Tacoma, Washington. Neither one of them had ever been in that area before, and they were eager to check it out. And most schools had just begun summer break, so they anticipated large crowds at the popular campgrounds. So they decided to go to a place that's a little bit harder to get to. One that you'd actually have to hike in to get to and get set up your camp. Now, she don't remember the place's name, but it was certainly challenging to reach. And even though it wasn't a hot day, both she and her boyfriend were sweating when they arrived at the rustic campground. She felt revitalized, she said, once they set up the tent and the hammock. And she finally understood why her boyfriend wanted to go there so badly. The place was absolutely gorgeous. The breeze atop the ridge is one of the most refreshing she'd ever felt. Well, about an hour after they got there, a woman, maybe 10 years older than either of them, approached the camp. She looked confused, and she asked them, had they by any chance seen a man about her age? Been looking for him for the last 30 minutes, she said. And Brian responded, no, we just got here. And she said, well, if you see him, let me know. He's my husband, and it's not like him to go missing. He was gone when she went to relieve herself, and doesn't make sense. She'd just get up and vanish like that. Well, they promised to keep an eye out and said if there's anything she needed to let them know. And she said, well, as far as she can tell, they're the only two other people there besides them. And then she pointed in the general direction of her campsite and continued looking for her husband. And Holly looked at her boyfriend and said, what do you think that's all about? And Brian said, well, he probably just went for a walk. Must have been nothing more than complete miscommunication. Clearly, he wasn't perturbed, but she also believed he was underplaying the situation just because he got the sense it gave her the creeps. They spent the rest of the day lying in the sun, playing cards, cooking hot dogs, and exploring. Never saw a trace of anybody, not even the worried woman who'd approached them earlier. Well, it wasn't until they got dark that things started to seem a little odd to them. The only way she knew how to put it was it felt like they weren't supposed to be there, like they'd come at the wrong time. And because of that feeling, she found it difficult to fall asleep. Now, the fact that her boyfriend was out cold and even started snoring didn't exactly help things. She felt like she was left to cope with that eerie environment all on her own. Well, once the sun went down, the wind picked up, making it hard to tell, but it sounded like somebody was walking toward the tent. Well, she nudged her boyfriend and said, wake up, I think somebody's walking around our camp. And he was very hard to wake up, but then he acted like she'd poured cold water on him. It wasn't but a couple of seconds later that the white light illuminated all directions, including them. Well, Brian was totally flustered and wanted to know what was happening. He was seeking reassurance from her. Well, they crawled over to one of the tent windows and unzipped the flap. And it no longer looked as though they were out of nature. If anything, it appeared they were in an empty white room. And although the light was intense, it wasn't blinding like how it would be if you were staring at the sun. And she couldn't understand how it would have rendered their surroundings invisible to their eyes. Well, they were both glancing in all directions when suddenly a face appeared in front of them. His eyelids were open as wide as they could go. He pressed his face up against the screen window and said, help me. Well, she screamed and fell backward onto her sleeping bag, and her boyfriend scrambled to find his hunting knife. And then he pointed it at the man, but he didn't budge. And since they were so isolated, there was no question this was the fellow the woman was searching for. They said his hair was filthy, his clothes were filthy, his hair was greasy. Looked to have been running for his life for days. He merely stared into the tent, desperate for assistance. His arm dangled in a way that made it seem he didn't have much control over him. Probably only seconds before they watched his eyes roll back into his head. Then his body fell forward onto their tent, forcing them to move out of the way. And before they could react, something pulled the lifeless body into the air. And it happened with such force, it looked as though something large had grabbed the guy from the ground. The collapsed wall sprang back into place as soon as the man's weight had been removed, and Brian rushed over to the window to see what had happened. She didn't see for herself, but he claimed to have gotten another glimpse of the body right before it disappeared. He said it looked as though the man had been absorbed by that light, which neither of them had any idea regarding where it was coming from. At that point, she curled up into a fetal position on top of her sleeping bag. She just wanted to go home. The camping trip transformed from a pleasant experience into a twisted nightmare, and she didn't want any part of it. But while she was lying there, the white light just went off, like somebody flipped a switch. She laid there, burying her face in the camping pillow. And she wasn't kidding when she said it felt like they'd traveled from one dimension to another within seconds. She could even hear the sound of insects again. If she had been right next to somebody else who experienced it, she might have thought the whole incident was a dream. All happened so fast, her adrenaline was pumping. Had no time at all to prepare for that level of insanity. And that's the scariest part of it. The fact that something that horrifying and perplexing can happen out of nowhere, and you don't have any chance to react. She decided she never wanted to camp in the woods again. Well, her boyfriend didn't say anything. Instead, he came over and laid down next to her. They needed time for their minds to recuperate, to regain balance, if that was even possible. And they remained in that position till morning, drifting in and out of sleep. And each time she woke up, Holly reevaluated whether those terrifying events actually happened. Well, Brian was the first one to leave the tent. Asked her to stay behind while he scoped things out. He said nothing looked out of the ordinary, but he asked her to stay put while he packed up their belongings. She said she felt much more comfortable during the hike down to the car. Numerous other people were walking in the vicinity, which seemed to limit the chances of anything too crazy to occur. Well, she and her boyfriend should have warned others about what happened, but they never got within speaking distance of anybody else. She started crying uncontrollably as soon as they made it to the car. The tears had been welling up for years and finally came pouring out. It wasn't until that point she realized how terrified she was. She cried for at least 90% of that drive home. Not only could she believe that they survived something so bizarre, but she was also having trouble accepting what they went through as reality. She thought both their brains were hard at work trying to develop any logical, semi-normal explanation for what had happened. And she'll forever wonder what happened to the man who got sucked up into the sky. She decided they had encountered extraterrestrial activity. And the question becomes, what happened to the wife? Well, we got another story. This young man, the narrator's name is Bill. It's been his early days in rural Oklahoma. Chautauqua, to be exact. Story takes place back in the 60s. Time when there were a few things a young boy could do for entertainment, especially in desolate Oklahoma. Still, those days are some of his finest look back on, in spite of the horror he faced. These convinced and made him stronger, mentally speaking. He said, growing up while he did, his friends and he frequently rode their bikes all over the place, and he rarely got cold enough to prevent him from wandering around. And they loved finding new streams and watering holes where they could cool down and search for small critters. Now, there was this one summer day when they rode their bikes particularly far in search of a patch of woods they never visited. He was with two of his friends, and were great guys to have his back. It was a near perfect, the movies Goonies or Stand By Me was a near perfect portrayal of their relationship. And none of them had ever expected to go swimming that day, so none of them had brought their bathing suits, but that rarely stopped them. When they found one of the clearest ponds they'd ever seen, they all jumped in with whatever shorts they had on. Bill remembered thinking it was the single best swimming location he'd ever been to. And if you ever lived in Texas or Oklahoma, you likely know these swimming locations are scattered across the landscape. All you need to do is find them. At least in his day, it wasn't uncommon to get a beautiful swimming hole to yourself for an entire afternoon. But on this particular day, he wished that they hadn't been alone. The water was hands down some of the clearest they'd ever found. It looked so inviting and prompting his friends and him to race each other toward the water. It's because of that excitement they didn't exactly scan what else might be in that emerald green liquid before getting in.
But one of his friends was the first to notice the strangeness. He returned to the surface from a dive and said, "Guys, you'll never guess what's down there." They were near the center of the watering hole, and the other two held their breath and followed the third one down to whatever he wanted to show. And right there on the bottom was a real human skull. Watering hole was maybe 6 or 7 feet at its deepest, and there were crevices everywhere, making it impossible to see everything around them. And when the three of them got back to the surface, one of them said he had found what looked like a rib cage with an arm bone attached to it, clearly human. Now, there was no way they could tell how old those bones were or how long they might have been there, but still. Even though they were creeped out at that point, the notion that they were together made the chilling discovery a little bit more tolerable. Once they regained their breath, they dove back down, and the sun was so bright that day, and it helped make things beneath the surface more visible. Well, in this dive, it was determined about 5 or 10 feet away from the skull was a rib cage and the bones of a lower arm. So the question was, what did they come across? Aside from being with his small group of friends, they all assumed they were only dealing with one person who must have drowned. But things got a little more alarming when they came across more bones. It soon became apparent they were swimming just above the remains of more than one individual. Well, one of the friends said, "I don't know if we should be here." He said, "I got a horrible feeling," and they agreed. Now, one of them, as they were swimming toward the plot of land where they'd dropped their bicycles, one of them said something that was a little bit unintelligible. And then they realized the third friend had stopped swimming. It wasn't until the narrator was nearly to the shore he turned and saw what his friends were looking at. Now, initially, he thought it was some dirty man wearing a large hat or helmet, but then he realized it was a set of horns, much like you'd see on an adult male ram. And then he realized the legs were shaped much more like a goat's than a man's. And it was on the other side of the watering hole, otherwise, who knows what would have happened. But the longer he gazed at it, the more inhuman it appeared. Well, the other two were clearly shell-shocked for not being able to make sense of what they were seeing. So the narrator had to call his friends a few more times before they started swimming to the shore. The goat man, if that's what it was, watched them, still as a statue. But when they started pedaling away, he ran around the shore as if he was going to try to head them off. But he ran in the most deranged way that he'd ever seen anybody run. It was so primitive looking. Now, seeing that he was chasing them, I mean, they took off faster than they'd ever ridden their bicycles. And the narrator didn't think any of them looked behind before they made it to the road, which was maybe 3/4 of a mile away. But they didn't see anything following them. Maybe the creature was just trying to intimidate them. They all told their families about everything that had happened at the waterhole. And he's pretty sure that the parents called the police that night. But nobody followed up. So they never knew what the creature was. Was it human? And who killed the people whose bodies were in the water? Then we got a story told by a young lady named Melissa, who had a disturbing experience of her own in the early fall of 2003. She'd just begun her junior year at Cabrini University when her best friend, Katie, and her boyfriend, Luke, invited her on a camping trip to a place called Raytown Lake. Well, they were in the first week of classes, and she felt tempted to reject the offer, but she had spent the entire summer working and didn't do many outdoor activities. So she accepted the invitation without knowing what was in store for her. And technically it was still late summer, but the transition into fall was already starting. The leaves had started changing color, making the lake's perimeter extra beautiful. And additionally, Luke had brought his friend Adam, who Melissa thought was cute. She was frustrated nobody had warned her he was coming along, but she she was sure her friend Katie suspected that Melissa would have backed out of fear of embarrassing herself around the guy or being too shy or something like that. Now, Adam and she barely knew each other, but he warmed up to her right away. Always made sure to sit next to her and walk beside her whenever the opportunity occurred. And she was a little hesitant about it at first, but knew he'd only recently gone through a breakup, so she couldn't help herself. Because it was a weekday that there was hardly anybody else around. Since Adam and she didn't yet know each other very well, she made sure to spend the first night alone in her own tent. Especially when it was... She felt tempted to have the guy next to her because it was chilly that night, but she told herself to hold off at least a little while longer. About midnight, she wished she'd invited Adam into her tent because she heard creepy squawks coming from the sky above him. It sounded like something big was circling in the air above the camp. Hadn't even seen anything yet, but kept remembering the noise, and it reminded her of the airborne dinosaurs make in Jurassic Park. But there was also something kind of ghostly about him. Sound came and went a few times, and of course she worried that it was interested in her scent or whatever. Kept trying to reassure herself there was nothing to worry about, but she was having trouble falling asleep. Next day she was stunned to learn that nobody else heard the noises. She even got a little annoyed by Adam's comments. He sounded like he was mocking her a bit, and she was easily offended. However, the young man had no trouble charming her all over, and it wasn't long before she found herself holding his hand as they walked over to the shore after breakfast. It was still too chilly to swim, so they sat there talking, admiring the view. Only other person in view was a fisherman on a rowboat, an old fellow who waved to him once his vessel drifted closer. He looked like a happy guy, as pleased as ever to be out on the lake all by himself. It was clear that was his version of paradise. And after their stomachs had settled from breakfast, they decided to set off on a hike around the lake. The lake was too big to do the entire perimeter, so they decided to do just a couple of miles or so and then come back. They'd been walking for about 30 minutes when they took a water break. That was humid, and they needed to remind each other to hydrate regularly. While they were doing that, Adam spotted another path that went up to a tree-filled hill and away from the lake shore. And he asked if they wanted to check it out where the rustic path led. Katie turned him down, encouraging just the two of them to go. Felt very staged, like her best friend was anticipating an opportunity to send Adam and her away for some time, alone time. Well, not long before they got to the top of the hill and arrived at a small clearing, he started making out with her. And it felt nice to be close to somebody. She hadn't experienced that in over 2 years since she caught her ex cheating on her. She had stopped being interested in intimacy for that whole period, but Adam proved that she was ready. They'd been kissing for a couple of minutes when he noticed a large shadow above him. It felt like a low-flying plane had gone just right over their heads, but there was no noise of a motor. And whatever it was gone by the time they looked up. Typically, she wouldn't have thought much of it, but those creepy noises from the previous night had certainly gotten her attention. Might sound a bit silly, but she is worried some giant vampire bat was flying around the area. One that wouldn't hesitate to suck their blood if it found one of them or leaving their bladders in the middle of the night. And those sounds were just so unconventional from anything she heard before, and they gave her such a terrible feeling. Thinking back on it, she thinks it was an instinctual response to a nearby predator. Well, since she was with Adam, she was able to ignore that looming fear for the most part, and he was so distracting in a variety of ways. His attention even had a way of providing her a confidence boost. One that applied, they'd be okay, and regardless of whatever it was there among them. The group separation felt even more planned when she asked if they should head back to the others. Adam then withdrew a picnic blanket and a flask from his small backpack, revealing how Luke requested some alone time with Katie. Well, she was glad it wasn't very buggy out, because Adam and she had removed their clothes after a few sips of whiskey, and, well, one thing led to another. After a bit, they were lying next to each other when they heard a man scream from a distance. It happened twice more a few moments later before the environment went oddly silent. She asked Adam what he think that was about, and he said, "I don't have the slightest idea." And she said, "Do you think it's anything to do with those noises I kept hearing last night?" And he said, "I think we should go check on our friends." No question, he had also had an unpleasant feeling, and she wasn't surprised if he'd had some instinctual response, but she was trying to play it off like he was cool in front of her. Well, Katie and Luke were making out after they got back down the hill, still with their clothes on. When they talked about the man's scream, they agreed, and it barely sounded like somebody was frustrated by something, not getting attacked or anything like that. Well, shortly after they got back together, the sun peeked through the clouds, so they decided to put on their bathing suits and hit the water. Well, they saw something alarming when they arrived at the shore near the campground. The man who had been in the rowboat, well, the rowboat was empty, drifting toward land. Maybe he went for a dip, Luke suggested, but then they spotted the fresh blood when the vessel got closer. Well, they connected the dots and realized the screams from what they'd heard earlier must have come from the fisherman who'd waved at them. Things became more high-flying when every inch of that boat progressed toward them. With every inch of the boat progressed toward them. That was all she needed to persuade her to want to leave the campground, but Luke and Adam... Luke, especially because he wanted to make sure we got our money's worth for the already paid getaway. Weren't exactly in favor of it. Well, Luke drove off soon after we spotted the abandoned boat. He intended to notify a park ranger or whoever was responsible for looking after the place, but he couldn't find a single soul. And because of what she had said earlier, she always had the hunch he didn't try very hard. He wanted to avoid any potential hassle to take away from the vacation. And maybe he worried the authorities would perceive them as witnesses to a murder. Well, the day progressed without further scares. But they made sure to stick around the campsite, sipping beer around several fires. The alcohol provided a much-needed sense of confidence following that blood-soaked rowboat scene. And it wasn't long after sundown that they headed to bed. And she was happy that Adam invited her to join him in his tent. She didn't want another sleepless night. As to be expected, they started going at it almost immediately, and something about the mood was different, though. She wasn't sure whether it was the come down from alcohol, the recent dark event haunting her mind, but she really wasn't in it. She wondered whether Adam had genuine feelings for her, if it was just pure lust. Well, about 15 minutes after they started cuddling, they heard activity coming from the treetops above them. Now, there were many tall trees around the campsite, and it sounded as though something much larger than a mere raccoon or a squirrel was dancing among the branches. And there were multiple times when pine needles or other debris sprinkled under the roof of the tent. And she whispered what he'd think it could be, and he said, I have no idea. They silently listened for a few more minutes before hearing something walking on the ground. And they were not human steps. It wasn't long before they heard their friend's tent unzip and Yuki yell, what the hell? Then there was more horrible squawking preceded by the noise of something crawling up a tree. They listened to wings flapping against the air a few minutes later. Unquestionably large wings. And then Luke called out, Melissa, Adam, can you guys hear me? And they both responded, yeah. She thought they were both evaluating whether it would be wise to announce her presence, wondering whether to do so might encourage that animal to come back. Luke said, that's the biggest bird I've ever seen. Let's make sure nobody wanders out of their tent alone for any reason. Well, all four remained in place till morning when they emerged from their tents, bags under their eyes from a lack of sleep. Luke kept his eyes on the trees above him while telling them what he saw. He said it looked like a massive condor and it was all black. He said it was somewhere around 6 feet tall. The sight of it astonished him, but the strangest aspect was how it ran to the tree and crawled up it before taking flight. And although he couldn't see him, he believed it had to possess strong hands or a second pair of talons to do that so quickly. He refused to discuss it further until they packed up camp and got out of there. Well, when they got back in the car, they decided that whatever Luke had seen must have been responsible for the fisherman's death. After all, what else could have attacked the guy in his rowboat while he was out on the water? Had they been in Alaska or somewhere else, she would have said that a grizzly bear might have done it, since they were supposed to be pretty good swimmers. But they don't exist anywhere near Pennsylvania, as far as anybody knows. That same night, Katie told her that she and Luke had called the police station nearest Raytown Lake to report what had happened. And that something about how somebody else had recently reported finding the boat. But she had no idea what had ever come of that. Although Luke was the only one to see it, they all concluded it must have been a thunderbird. And it's kind of bizarre to think such a creature actually exists. Well, there are more mysterious creatures than we can imagine. I've known a number of folks who found tracks of creatures that couldn't exist. I've seen a few of them myself when I was in South America. Well, at that point, we've run out of time for today's show. And since this is a topic I like, we're going to talk about it again tomorrow. Bodies in the Woods. Until tomorrow, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.